It's the WMRA Daily. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Immigration advocates and faith leaders in Stanton rally support for a youth being forced out of the country, away from his family, by immigration enforcement. Public surveys show solid support for a trail-only option for the proposed project between Broadway and Front Royal. And Senator Tim Kaine tours the Moton Museum in Farmville, and Jeff Shapiro surveys the week in Virginia politics. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, July 10th. A high school student in Stanton, originally from Central America, has been ordered to leave the U.S. before his 18th birthday, leaving behind his mother, stepfather, and younger siblings. A community group has rallied to support him. WMRA's Randy B. Hagee reports.
On a recent Sunday, about 30 people gathered in the Fellowship Hall at Trinity Episcopal Church in Stanton. A potluck buffet of deviled eggs, tacos, and cakes was organized as a fundraiser for La Familia Fund, an immigrants' aid organization housed at the church.
A group of neighbors from the greater, Augusta, Waynesboro, Stanton family want to raise some funds to support a young man who is being self-deported. He needs to go back to his country of birth against his will.
Donald Romanek is a member of the church and the steering committee of the fund.
I mean, this is the basic Christian message. Feed the hungry, clothe the naked, welcome the stranger. People don't realize that, Mary, Joseph, and the Christ child were refugees when they went into Egypt.
Priest and associate rector, Reverend Kara Ellen Modisett, said one part of the vows taken by clergy is
the idea that we respect the dignity of every human being, that we are to love our neighbors as ourselves, and as Donald was saying, refugees are our neighbors. We stand with those who are afraid. Jesus stood with those who were vulnerable, and that is part of what we believe. That is part of our theology.
The group has raised around $22,000 over the past year to help several immigrant families in the area with legal fees, rent, utilities, and phone cards to contact loved ones in detention. At the potluck, they achieved the goal of raising enough for one 17-year-old kid's plane ticket. We spoke with his mother, Patricia. We're withholding their last name and other family members' names and their exact country of origin due to the family's fears of violence against those forced to return to Central America.
Somos una familia muy unida.
Luella Hill translated for us.
We are a really close family. We live here in Stanton, and right now we're facing some grave difficulties. We're hoping that at the end of these difficulties that our family can be together again.
Patricia's is a mixed-status family. She's been here for 12 years, is married to a U.S. citizen, and her youngest child is a U.S. citizen. Patricia herself has an open immigration case. Her older children were able to join her in the U.S. over the last several years, but two have not been allowed to stay under current federal immigration policy.
This process has been very painful, but these are the orders of the judge.
Her oldest son was deported last fall after spending one day in jail for a misdemeanor charge of driving with a suspended license, following three previous driving-related misdemeanors, according to court records.
He's a young guy, and he was driving his aunt's car without his license, and he was driving too fast. My son reported to the Harrison Rockingham jail, and he did his 24 hours, but when he stepped out at the end of the 24 hours, he walked into the hands of immigration. Every day that my older son was in detention in Louisiana was horrible. The food, the way that he was treated. The experience my first son was having in the detention center was so bad that we decided it would be better to return to our home country despite what is happening there rather than continue this daily horror of the detention center.
The oldest son's experience affected how the family has handled the second son's case once he too came under the scrutiny of the immigration court system. The second son has no criminal record. He had been released into the country by Border Patrol agents as an unaccompanied minor to reunite with his mother. But as legal adulthood approaches, he's not allowed to stay. By complying with voluntary departure, he won't spend time in a detention center, and Patricia hopes he will have a legal pathway to return.
Es un niño bueno.
He's a good kid. He gets along well with people. He has a lot of friends. The teachers at his school love him. He was looking forward to his school year, and he had goals for the school year. He was excited for the classes he was going to take. He was looking forward to getting his diploma. He was excited to take carpentry classes and mechanic classes.
Instead of starting his junior year of high school in the coming months, he has to board a plane, headed back to a country his family left because of gang activity and drug trafficking.
I try and be strong, but it's really difficult. The day that the judge told my son he had to deport, it was horrible. It was maybe 2 weeks that I couldn't sleep. I just have to ask for the help of God to protect my family.
Pidiendo a Dios protección para mis hijos en nuestro país.
La Familia Fund is collecting donations for this family and others affected by immigration policy. Checks can be written out to Trinity Episcopal Church in Stanton with a memo designating the donation for La Familia Fund. For WMRA News, I'm Randy B. Hagee.
Find all our reporting on the local impacts of immigration policy at WMRA.org and on our app. The Harrisonburg Planning Commission voted Wednesday night to not recommend approval for the proposed apartment complex formerly known as The Link. Rocktown Now reports that the 3-3 tied vote amounts to a rejection of the controversial plan to rezone nearly 3 acres along South Main Street and South Liberty Street. City Council had returned the proposal to the commission back in April due to a growing list of changes accumulated since it was originally recommended for approval last July. City Council will reconsider the proposal for the project, now called The Lindsay, at their August 25th meeting. The families of 3 James Madison University students killed in a February 2023 crash have filed wrongful death lawsuits against 29 members and the founder of the Pi Beta Chi fraternity. The families of John Luke Ferguson, Nicholas Troutman, and Joshua Martis are each seeking $150 million. The 3 died in a crash on West Virginia Route 259 in Hardy County. WHSV reports that the driver, Campbell Fortune, previously served 90 days in jail and is now serving 7 years of probation after a negligent homicide conviction. The lawsuit alleges the defendants were taking part in a fraternity recruitment event involving alcohol and hazing before the crash, and that fraternity members knew that Fortune had used marijuana and nitrous oxide before driving. Following the crash, the lawsuit claims the fraternity's president sent a text message to members instructing them not to discuss what took place that night with anyone. Attorneys for the families are seeking jury trials. No court dates have been set. After a reset, the Virginia Department of Transportation is reporting public support for a trail-only version of a hiking and biking trail in the valley. The Northern Virginia Daily reports that the most recent VDOT report of public surveys, released Wednesday, shows 53% of respondents chose rail to trail, removing the tracks from the dormant 49-mile corridor between Broadway and Front Royal and building a recreational trail in their place. A separate proposal to restore the rail line with a trail alongside it garnered only about 36%. That proposal had been pushed under the administration of former Governor Glenn Youngkin. VDOT is leading the effort to purchase the defunct rail line from Norfolk Southern. Senator Tim Kaine was in Farmville Thursday to tour a museum devoted to Virginia's struggle for civil rights. Radio IQ's Brad Kuttner reports.
Senator Tim Kaine was technically at the Robert Russa Moten Museum in Farmville to check on some HVAC repairs he'd secured federal funding for. About 95 degrees and sunny outside, thankfully it was up and running inside.
Nice cool, it's a good corner to.
That's Kanan Townsend, Moten's executive director. The museum is inside Robert Russa Moten High School, considered the student birthplace of America's civil rights movement. It's devoted to the legacy of massive resistance, the years-long effort by some Virginia localities to close their school systems entirely rather than integrate black and white children. Townsend showed Kane some new additions to the museum, including an interactive display that allows you to look up those impacted by school closures. A Farmville local, Townsend typed in Earl Townsend, his father.
So dad was 6 getting ready to start the first grade in September of 59. He did not start the first grade in September. He worked on his family farm and neighboring farms, picking tobacco for the most part. Goes back to school, turns 11 years old as a first grader.
when they finally opened.
He does go through school, luckily graduates. Mm-hmm.
As the tour wrapped up, Kane connected Townsend and his father's story to some of the actions coming out of the White House.
We are living in a time of very significant pushback right now, which means that museums like Moton, the Moton Museum, are even more important in this moment.
But in such regressive times, the senator said he looks to the Virginia story.
If we can make progress here, given what we've lived through and the scar tissue that's still so present, why would I despair of the progress we could make as a nation?
In Farmville, I'm Brad Kuttner.
The Cannabis Control Authority wants to hear from Virginians about the upcoming recreational market. The CCA has launched an anonymous public survey that will be open through July 21st. It is available at cca.virginia.gov. The Commonwealth is set to start selling recreational marijuana next July. Virginia's economy is starting to recover from job cuts at the federal level. Radio IQ's Michael Pope reports.
The United States DOGE service was a shock to the system in Virginia, but the latest numbers are showing a recovery. A new report from George Mason University predicts Northern Virginia will see job growth as early as December.
I think we see a light at the end of the tunnel regarding the broadest impacts of DOGE.
That's Assistant Director for the Center for Regional Analysis at George Mason University, Keith Waters.
While we've seen leisure and hospitality drop off a little bit in terms of total employment, we haven't seen the massive pullback in leisure and hospitality that might have been anticipated given the impacts of DOGE.
2 years ago, before the DOGE cuts, CNBC ranked Virginia as the top state for business. Since Trump took office, Virginia was bumped to fourth place. And now, this week, CNBC is promoting Virginia to third place. Here's John Provo at Virginia Tech.
The state's faced tremendous headwinds, disruptions, uncertainty, federal issues, shifts at the port because of tariffs and other things. If you put all that in front of you and still come out number three, I mean, I think that's in anybody's world a pretty good outcome.
He says there's light at the end of the tunnel, noting an AstraZeneca investment in Albemarle County and a new Eli Lilly hub in Goochland. I'm Michael Pope.
Has opinion on data centers in Virginia reached a tipping point? Radio IQ politics analyst Jeff Shapiro joins Michael to discuss that and more in state politics and government.
All right, a lot of news to get to this week, starting with data centers. Jeff Shapiro, it seems like we're seeing a shift here in the data center wars. Last week, we saw a developer pull the plug on a proposal for the largest data center in the world. And then this week, we saw the Prince William County Board of Supervisors unanimously reject a zoning change. What's going on with data centers?
You know, it looks as if we've reached a tipping point. One person who's mindful of this and is really trying to regain the initiative as our governor is Abigail Spanberger. And she's been talking up in an interview with Politico this kind of user tax. The governor is looking to kind of regain the upper hand coming off a very bumpy start with the legislature and that protracted Democrat versus Democrat budget impasse, at the heart of which was what to do about these data centers.
And shifting to this proposed merger between Dominion Energy and a Florida company, the lieutenant governor says, hold on a second, let's have a pause here, let's delay this thing. But so far, we're not really hearing much from the governor on this, are we?
So arguably, we now have another split among top Democrats in Virginia. The lieutenant governor, Ghazala Hashmi, wants the Corporation Commission to press Dominion and NextEra to sort of delay steps towards the merger beyond the six-month review until there are answers to deep dive questions, in particular about the takeover's impact on consumers' bills and services. Spanberger, as you note, is publicly neutral on this merger. That's rather interesting. You know, she's a beneficiary of Dominion's political largesse. She finally took some money from the utility ahead of her inaugural, $100,000. But she collected a lot of money from environmental interests as a candidate, more than $5 million. I'm wondering how that supposed neutrality is going over with both sides in that debate.
And then on the topic of gun violence prevention, the governor put her signature on a bunch of new laws to prevent gun violence, but there are many challenges in court. And I understand there was a recent decision that might actually invite even more legal challenges. How does that work?
Specifically on this prohibition on these military style long rifles, the so-called assault rifles, the Supreme Court named a 3-judge panel to consider a request by the Attorney General to consolidate 4 legal challenges from very red, very rural areas of the state to that assault weapons ban. Those judges told the Supreme Court they think the matters should be handled individually. That will augur clearly additional litigation. There is another wrinkle in all of this. At week's end, one of the judges in the local cases in Washington County out in Southwest Virginia, who had issued an order delaying the implementation of that assault weapons ban in his jurisdiction, now says that order applies statewide. So we're going to be in court for a while on this one.
And then finally, voters in Richmond might soon be making a decision about paying higher taxes for school construction. What's going on there?
You know, remember when Glenn Youngkin was governor, he vetoed legislation that would allow localities to go to referendum and ask their voters to support or reject increased sales taxes for school construction and maintenance. Well, that bill was finally passed and signed by Governor Spanberger. The Richmond School Board is taking steps to kind of get that sales tax question on the ballot in November and look to a bunch of other localities to do the same.
All right, that's all the time that we've got for this week. My name is Michael Pope, and we have been joined by politics analyst and UVA scholar Jeff Shapiro. Talk to you next week.
Ciao.
Finally today, the Virginia Holocaust Museum in Richmond is looking for Holocaust survivors and their family members to participate in a new photo project. The legacy portraits will include black and white photos of subjects and their stories, to show how the experience of Holocaust survivors continues to shape their families. Here's the museum's executive director, Sam Asher.
And we invite the survivors to contact us to have the whole family photograph, and we'll have the history also along with the photographs to show who these folks were, how they got out of the Holocaust or endured it, and here are their family and what they're all about.
The photos will be on display at the museum in 2027. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicki. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy your Friday.